This is St. Louis Public Radio. Since Saturday's fatal shooting of Michael Brown, St. Louisans have been trying to come to grips with what happened. How could a college-bound teenager with no history of violence or criminal behavior end up shot to death by a police officer in his own neighborhood? St. Louis Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra and Tim Lloyd went looking for answers and to find out what people in Ferguson are doing to cope with the situation. We'll start with Veronique, who took a step back from the tragedy to talk with St. Louis University criminologist Norman White about some of the underlying causes that led up to this week's events.
So we're talking today because of the situation in Ferguson, but we're not in Ferguson. We're in the O'Fallon neighborhood, in a park actually, in North St. Louis. Why are we here?
Because the struggles in Ferguson are no different than the struggles in O'Fallon Park or in the Ville or in Northwood or any of the other communities in this part of St. Louis. The communities have been left in a position where kids are growing up in what I call being in risk, that they are challenged in their daily lives by stressors from family, from peers, from the schools they attend, the institutions they interact with, from police. And the kids in the developmental literature that experience that are at greater risk for involvement in more serious delinquency, serious violent behavior. So they're disaffected, or they're disconnected, not attached to the mainstream, primarily because we've placed them there.
So now, just to be clear, from what we know about Michael Brown, he didn't have a history of violent or criminal behavior. He was actually headed for college. So how did someone like him end up in a deadly confrontation with the police?
There are communities that are, because of the crime problems, because of the gang involvement, because of the violence that's associated with lots of kids that are at risk or in risk, police begin to over-police. They stop everybody. Every kid becomes a possible offender.
I'm Tim Lloyd, and I'm going to interrupt my colleague Veronique LaCapra's conversation with Norman White. And I'm doing this to give you a better feel for some of the things they're talking about. To do that, we're going to step away from this park bench in North St. Louis and go to the Canfield Green apartment complex in Ferguson, just down the street from where Michael Brown was fatally shot by police this past weekend. Marva Robinson is sitting cross-legged on the sidewalk, showing kids how to blow bubbles.
When you're feeling stressed, you can take a deep breath. So I want everybody to breathe in through their nose and breathe out through your lips.
She's doing this to teach deep breathing skills that could help relieve stress. Robinson heads up the local chapter of the Association of Black Psychologists, which goes by ABSPSY for short. All week, ABSPSY members have been at protests, church events, and gatherings of any sort, offering counseling services and working to ease tensions. It's part of a larger push by African American mental health professionals to provide services in the wake of Brown's death.
A lot of nightmares, loss of appetite, fear. And so just a lot of fear of feeling lost and forgotten and unprotected.
And she says around-the-clock news coverage has spread that heightened sense of anxiety well beyond Ferguson.
This is going to affect multiple layers of people for a very long time. You don't even have to be from St. Louis to be affected by this.
But she says it can take time for those feelings to rise to the surface. That has Robinson handing out flyers about free resources and collecting contact information so she and other mental health providers can follow up. And Robinson's not alone. Miranda Jones is a manager for Better Family Life, a nonprofit that focuses on things like healthcare and community building.
You cannot expect them to come to an office in Clayton, Richmond Heights. We have to come to them.
And she says being here helps them connect with people like Tammy Henderson. Henderson lives in Maryland Heights and came to pay her respects. She's shaky and emotional as she stands just a few feet away from where Brown was killed by police.
My grandson is scared. My daughter is scared. She don't want to be on the news with the same thing with her son.
In the street where Brown lost his life, candles, cards, and signs form a small memorial. The mood is peaceful, but there's a tension in the air. A group holds hands as Reverend Willis Johnson leads them in prayer.
We have a lot of feelings. We feel a lot of ways, and we pray that how we feel is how we feel, but you will fix this situation.
He prays for calm. He prays for racial unity. But like many people in St. Louis and beyond, Johnson says quelling the anger and disenfranchisement felt by many African Americans will take systemic change. Now is a good time to get back to that park bench in North St. Louis, where my colleague Veronique LaCapra is talking with St. Louis University criminologist Norman White.
Some of the reaction to Michael Brown's shooting has been violent, and not all of that violence has been directed at the police. There's been looting, there's been destruction of property. Why is that?
So there are kids who are just angry. You know, I did an interview a couple of weeks ago with a guy who said to me, you know, you get it, that it's essentially it's the roots of our bitterness. It's the police stopping us. It's the poverty we deal with every day. It's the schools where we don't feel like we fit in. It's people looking at us as though there's something wrong with us and we don't belong. That anger simply has found a place to be released at this moment.
The problems we're talking about aren't unique to Ferguson.
Lots of kids are poor, but the problem here is that race is overlaid in this, and that's a significant part of the anger that's going on. That it's about racial profile, and it's about, for example, you drive in your car and a cop's sitting along the side of the road, and you drive by him, and all of a sudden they pull out and they just drive behind you, and they drive behind you for blocks, they drive behind you for a mile. And it could be benign, the reason that they're there, but it doesn't feel like it's simply benign. It feels like I'm trying to send you a message that I'm here and I'm watching you. And that's not something that kids are comfortable with. It's not something that most adults are comfortable with. Our problem is that we don't talk about it between races most of the time. So I talk with other African-Americans that are older, in my age, I'm 60 years old, that have these same issues, but we don't sit down at across the table from people that don't look like us and have these conversations. And that's where the change will come.